You need to read.
Well, you can, but I just get some type of the commission. That's the only.
Let's put this right in your pocket.
Well, if I wouldn't be recorded, I could speak mystically. But now that they're recording me, I'm going to be a little bit hampered. So if I cover myself up a little bit, that's only because I want to talk about things that shouldn't be recorded. All right, that's right. There's, you know, Purim has a interesting place in the cycle of the Jewish year and the way that it's dealt with, starting from the times of the Talmud itself to the later sages and authorities, even to today. Just for example, Beth Jacob has a Purim carnival. I never heard of a Hanukkah carnival or a Shavuos carnival. There's something in the air is different about Purim, per se. And you find already in the sages from the Rizal, the great 16th century Kabbalist. So he writes that the holiest day of the year, most of us, I think, would assume would be Yom Kippur. That's the correct answer. Most of us would assume Yom Kippur is the holiest day. So the Rizal, the great Kabbalist, said Yom Kippur, the Chaf in the beginning of that word, Kippur, Yom Kippurim. It's like Purim. Meaning that Purim is way up there. Yom Kippur is like Purim. Kippurim. So something about Purim is a little bit differently. In fact, the Gemara in...
When did this guy live?
I believe he was in the 16th century. Yeah, the Talmud asks the question, Esther min HaTorah minayin. Where do you find a hint of Esther in the Torah, in the written Torah, the five books of Moses that we have? Where is there a hint of the character of Esther? And then Mark goes through a certain verse and it says, you can see the way the verse is spelled, it looks like the word Esther is in there. Then that's the same question for Mordechai. Where do we see Mordechai, a hint of Mordechai? And the same thing for Haman. He doesn't do that by the other. For Hanukkah, doesn't ask, where do you see, you know, the Chashmonaim? Where do you see Yochanan the Kohen? Doesn't ask those questions. Why do they want to find a hint? What is it about Purim? I just wanted to discuss one aspect, which I find to be a fascinating aspect. The Talmud in Shabbos, in the Sefer Shabbos, says that at the giving of the Torah, and stands from the verses, it was as if the Jewish people were gathered at the foot of the mountain, as if God, so to speak, picked up the mountain and held it over their heads and said, if you accept my Torah, things will be great for you. And if not, that'll be the end. So that's what the Talmud says. So the Talmud asks, wait a minute. You're telling me that I was forced into this? You can't do that. I thought we need to accept this willingly. We're living a lie. We have a crazy life here. We have to accept it willingly. How could you tell me that it's as if God himself picked up a mountain and held it over there? Well, yeah, you're right. By Purim, they accepted it willingly. Something happened during Purim where even though the initial acceptance of the Torah seems to have been a little bit coerced, so to speak, we'll explain what that means. Purim time, they accepted it
by
willingly.
Purim, by the actual happening of Purim?
Yes.
Not all the previous years.
Yes. Right. Interesting. It's a funny passage of the Talmud. I'd like to explain as follows. In regard to the giving of the Torah, the relationship that we have with God is different than every other gift. If I would give you a gift, one of my boys, one of my students, just handed me a gift of 3 tickets. Because he was leaving, he had 3 extra tickets. He gave me the tickets. What relationship do I now have with him after he gave me the tickets? So that's it. He gave me the tickets. The tickets are mine. He left and finished. The sages say when Hashem gave us the Torah, they compare it to a king who has an only daughter. One daughter. Parents who only have one daughter, they love the daughter very much. They want the daughter to get married, but they love the daughter very much. And they get into a bind. Now it's time to get the daughter married. The daughter finds an appropriate match. And the king sits down, his daughter and the new prince, and he says, you know, I love my daughter very much. I really want to keep her with me. But I know you have to start your new life together, and it's time for you to go. So I'll tell you what you could do for me. Every place where you guys live, build me a little mother-in-law suite in the back of your house, and I'll be able to come visit. I told this over to some of my ninth graders, so they started groaning. I said, you're not even married yet. Wait until you get married and you have a real mother-in-law. But that's what the sages say. As if a king who says to the prince and princess, the new chassan and kala, wherever you live, just build me a little room in the back of your house. I'll be able to come and visit. Please do that for me. So say the sages, when God gave us the Torah, he said, this is my most precious entity. To give it to you, I don't want to give it up. But I know that you need to take it because I've given it to you. So I'll tell you what. Everywhere where you go, build me a little sanctuary and I'll come visit. That's the relationship that we have in the giving of the Torah. That's how we accepted it. The Maral explains that when we accepted the Torah, the reason when we were forced into it, it wasn't a matter of being forced like a real mountain was held over our head. He says, imagine you're in, heaven forbid, in a burning house. You're in the second floor of a house and you see the house is engulfed in flames. Do you have an option to run out or not to run out? Are you forced? You do whatever you want. You could stay, you could leave. What are you going to do? You're going to hightail it out of there. Why do you hightail it out of there? So, what kind of question is that? Because if I stay here, I'm going to die. I know that. That's obvious. I'm engulfed in flames. If I stay, I die. If I run, I live. I'm not forced. Mm-hmm. But you are forced. Because your options are so obvious and clear. Like, what's there to talk about over here? Of course you're going to run out of the house. So the Maral explains, at the giving of the Torah, the Jewish people had such a clarity of vision as to what the purpose of creation was, the existence of a God, what the Torah meant. It was so clear. The choice, accept, don't accept. It wasn't a choice. It was a choice of a fish. You should be in water, not be in water. What kind of choice is that? This is what I need to live. Jewish people had that clarity. No, we don't have that clarity anymore, but they did. So he says, that's what the Talmud means when they say that we were sort of forced into it. We were forced into it because we saw with such a clarity of vision, there was no option. This is the way that it has to be. Well, historically speaking, the Purim story is a fantastic... The reality, the Purim story takes place from the time that we got the Torah. So we were in the desert for 40 years, and we were in the land of Israel for another 850 years. During that time, the relationship that we had with God was one of... There were prophets. You could see in the Holy Temple, you could see the presence of God Himself. He communicated with us. There was never a heretic in the Jewish people for 850 years. Nobody ever said, I don't believe in God. You know why? Because you'd say, come with me. Take him to Jerusalem, and you'd say, there he is. You see? I'm finished. And you can't deny that which is there in front of you. People did things that were wrong. That happened throughout Jewish history because we have desire. That never changed. But to deny the existence of a creator was impossible. Because what do you do? There he is. Go look. Come with me. I'll take you. I'll show you his presence. You could feel it. It's tangible. No one ever denied the presence of God when you could see the presence of God. That didn't exist. With the destruction of the first temple, however, the Jews go into exile. So imagine our mother-in-law suite. So imagine the son-in-law whose mother-in-law shows up every Shabbos to visit. Every Shabbos, there she is. He doesn't really like it at all. Very frustrating to him. And in 1 week she stops. Doesn't show up 1 week. He says, finally. And then next week she doesn't show up. And then his kids ask him, how come grandma doesn't come anymore? He says, oh no, she just stopped coming. And the next week goes by and she doesn't come anymore. And all of a sudden, what happened to grandma? I don't know. For the first time in Jewish history, the Jewish people go into the exile. And they look around. What happened to their God? What happened? We had this relationship in which we accepted this Torah because we had this clarity of vision in which it was so obvious to us what we were supposed to be doing here. It was so obvious that there was a presence of a creator. And then all of a sudden he stopped coming around. Who knew? Does Torah still exist? Do we still have to keep... What happens now? Just a few short years later, there's a decree. Entire Jewish people are going to be wiped out. And turns around, looks around, what? Yeah. Where is the presence of... What happened? Now what? On this, the Talmud asked, Esther min ha-Torah mina. Where do you find a hint of Esther? That even in a time when you can't see God, you can't see Him, you don't know what's going on, that He's still going to protect us. And the Talmud brings the verse that even when Hashem hides His face, from that verse will send us Esther. Even when the face is hidden, you can't see anymore. You don't really know that He exists. You don't really see with any clarity of vision anymore. You don't see that? Still, in that circumstance, I'm going to be there. say if you say a parable of a king, we always talk about parables with kings. King who has a son, he loves his son very much, but the officers in the royal courts are very jealous of this king, of his son, because they spent their whole life in trying to climb the corporate ladder to earn a place in the royal palace, to earn their place in the court of the king. And his son, you know, just walks right in, doesn't have to go through the whole process, sits on the king's lap, gets whatever he wants. They're very jealous of this king, of this little kid. King gets older, he gets into his adolescent years, he begins to rebel a bit. He does something, the king says, that's it, I've had with you, and he throws him out of the palace into a forest and just ignores him out there. So the child, of course, suspects that he's been abandoned by his father. But the king, of course, loves his son, doesn't want to abandon him, so he sends some of his officers that are on his side to go and look after the kid to protect him. A couple days into the forest, a bear, a wild bear, shows up and attacks the child, and all of a sudden, one of the king's, one of the members of his court pops out of the woods with a shotgun, blows the bear away, and everyone is saved. The kid says to himself, that's odd. And it just happens to be this funny coincidence. While I was in danger, this kid, his officer, was right there and protected me. Goes on in the forest. Another day or two later, one of the king's officers, who was jealous of this kid, tries to attack the child, and another one of the king's officers pops out of the woods to protect him, saves him. So at that point, what does the kid say to himself? At that point, the kid says, king's still there. I thought I was abandoned. I was sure I was here by myself. And when that happens, so what emotion runs through that kid at that time when that happens? The emotion at that point is that my father in fact loves me. He never abandoned me. If he had abandoned me, he just would have left me here to die. But he never abandoned me. And I can't see him, and he's not here. He's never abandoned me. And the love that the kid comes upon when he realizes that for the first time, that love carries him through. That's what Purim is all about. Purim is our first experience in the exile. When all of a sudden, why did Mom stop coming around? Maybe I really didn't like her when she was here. I was pretty angry that she kept coming. Jewish people rebelled against that, which God wanted them. But you know, she came around, and all of a sudden she stops. Now what? And the kid in the forest, I don't know, what am I supposed to do at this point? And then the Purim story says, when you think that there's nobody there looking for you, and you can't find the presence of God in the open way like you used to be able to find him, he's just not there, he's still looking out. He's still there, he's still protecting, he's still sending people to make sure that we're okay. That sense of the love that God has never forsaken his people, no matter what. Even when we do things that are wrong, we get thrown out of the land of Israel, we don't have that presence anymore, always will be there with us. That's like, it was like a new, he re-accepted the Torah.
From the destruction of the first temple to that, there was no collective experience like that years ago.
Right, correct. There was none. There was God's presence was clear and open to all. There he was in the temple. There were prophets. All of a sudden they're kicked out of the land of Israel. You don't have that. We don't have it today. We have a clarity of vision as to what we're supposed to be doing. We certainly don't. Heretics abound because, after all, where is he? So we don't have that. So the first experience is a Jewish people in which they're looking around and they say, where did he go? Now what are we supposed to do? We only accepted this Torah on the condition of where we had that clarity of vision. And now all of a sudden that vision is blurred. We don't really get it anymore. Are we still bound by it? Are we supposed to do it? Is he still there? Does he still care? And the Purim story told us, yeah, I'll never forget you. Never.
How long did that collective experience last? I think it's still...
Experience of Purim?
Yeah, it's still...
That's why we have Purim is such a... That's why Yom Kippur is about fear.
Right.
Yom Kippur is all about... This is about love.
Right.
He's never going to abandon me. He loves us, and no matter what we've done wrong, as no matter how long this exile continues, this is about the love that we have.
Now, there are challenges. The Holocaust challenges this morning, right?
100%.
God might have... He might have helped come out again and did it again in the Holocaust. That would have been nice. That's a challenge.
100%.
That's a challenge.
I don't deny that. It's a challenge.
A tremendous challenge.
There is no response to that. I'm not going to even offer one. Purim is about the knowledge that through all of that, we will still be here. We will always still be here. And there's always looking out, there's always a hand outstretched, making sure as a whole, as a collective whole, the Jewish people, nothing will ever happen to the Jewish people as a whole.
I guess after the destruction of the first temple, there was considered a Holocaust,
right? 100%.
So they could do it 7 years later. Maybe we can do it within 7 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think about it from a historical perspective, as, you know, as devastating as the Holocaust was, as a direct result of that, we have the State of Israel. I'm not,
yeah, no, you're not
coming to say that's why.
No, and that's a good, right, that's a scary little point.
I don't,
or it justifies it. Or,
I'm not saying it's a justification. I'm just saying as when we look at, when we'll eventually look back, there are the events that happened to Jews. When you just think about the state of Jewry in Europe, there was a destruction, but the poverty, the difficult, I mean, we are, and the life that the Jews live in, a lot of things have been a world history. As Jewish history has been affected in a major way, is that a reason? I'm not saying it's a reason. Obviously, whatever we got, we deserve. What I don't know. I'm not saying it's a reason. I have no idea. But there's a hand that's guiding. As a whole, a collective whole of Jewish people will always survive. There's always a hand looking out, making sure that as a collective whole of Jewish people survive and maintain themselves, and always will. And that feeling of that's what came from the Purim story.
Where's Esther? So where's Esther in the Torah?
So the verse says, right, Anochi Hasper Hastir Ponai. It says, I will hide my face from you. In the rebuke that we're given, I will hide my face. So from the words, I will hide my face, the Talmud derives Esther. Yes, even when my face is hidden, I will send you an Esther who will always will be there to as your salvation during those times. And even in those hidden times, the love will always be there. And that's why there's such a special time. We make. I don't know why that's shaking. That doesn't explain the parade, but there is that special connection that we have. That's always maintained through that. So that's rekindled every year with the Purim story. That it's all. There's no open miracle. It's all natural events. One event after another. The story takes place over 11 years. Where's the hand of God? Well, you see that when you look back over it. Nothing was obvious, but you see throughout the whole story, the hand of God is directing the events. And that knowledge that when we can't see it clearly, but that there's a hand there that's guiding the events, putting things into place, orchestrating those events, that we're able to be safe when it's necessary, that gets us through this time to know that the connection is always there and always will be a salvation awaiting us.
Mortifying the Torah?
The verse derives, the Gemara derives from the ketores, the incense that they used to burn, from the mor d'ror was one of the things they used to think. So the Targum Unkelus translate that as Mordechai, a connection to the name Mordechai.
When did the parade start?
Parade started at 11.
No, I mean in history.
Oh, I have no idea.
That sort of stuff isn't
yeah, no, certainly not.
Or any.
I have no idea. To that, I have no answer.
Did Maimonides talk about that?
No. Perm parade?
Perm parade.
The mask is a different story. The mask has a...
Where's the mask?
The mask comes from dressing up and hiding. That derives from the Nahafochu, that everything was flipped on its head. And there are a lot. That's a whole different discussion. The concept of costumes on Perm, why we dress up on Perm.
Is that talk about in the
I think it's a little bit later than the Talmud, but it is pretty early. I think in the 15th century you already find references to that. That's in the Talmud, yeah.
There's a hint to the parade. Yesh am hachad mefuzar umeforad. Meforad, the root is parad. Parade.
Very good.
I don't know about that.
I'll be right back. I'm just going to make one last final call.
All right.
Thank you.
Enjoy your perm.
Later commentators try to find Hanukkah in the Torah. But that's not
in the Talmud, I don't say.
Not in the Talmud, though.
I don't think
only
so.
The later. Like Hashmanah, you said Hashmanah was the 25th stop in the desert.
Right. They wanted to know, where do you have a source of the Torah that even when you can't see, think that there's still, where is the source of such a concept? That even when it's hidden, there still will be that revelation.
The Haman one, I thought.
That's poor.
That's
poor. You just finished, or you have...
Yeah, there's another one coming in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not.